We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Burnout is such a problem for workers that some employers are considering reducing the length of the work week. Nearly one-third, 30% of large U.S. companies are exploring new work schedule shifts, such as a four-day or four-and-a-half-day work week. That's according to a KPMG survey of CEOs released last week. The idea is to attract and retain talent in a hot job market where many employees feel overworked and underpaid. American workers don't get enough free time, and our work has become central to our identities. Journalist Simone Stolsoff explores why we do and how much we do for a living has become such a priority in our lives in his new book, The Good Enough Job, Reclaiming Life from Work. He joins us today on The Spark. Mr. Stolsoff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
So why did you want to write this book?
There's sort of two ways in. One, I'm a labor reporter. So for years, I have been monitoring and trying to characterize Americans' fraught relationship to work. And the second was personal. I worked as a journalist for a number of years, and I came to a crossroads in my career about 5 years ago where I offered to leave the industry. And it didn't feel like I was choosing between two jobs. It felt like I was choosing between two versions of myself. I don't know, some listeners have probably been in a similar place before where they've learned that their jobs have become so entwined with their identities. And I knew I wasn't the only one. Now, if your last name is Miller or Baker, you think conflating your job with who you are is maybe nothing new. But I think there is something very unique to this moment, especially coming out of the pandemic, where Americans are renegotiating their relationship to work and trying to develop a healthier relationship with what they do.
So you were thinking about Simone Stolsoff as the journalist.
Exactly. You know, as you and I both know, journalism is a field where your name is on everything you do. A lot of people's identities and self-worth is very tied and bound into the pieces that they're producing. It's a very public career. And I had an opportunity to join a company in the private sector. And it didn't feel like I was losing a job necessarily. It felt like I was losing part of who I was. So there was this sort of negligent abandonment of a duty that I had. You know, if democracy dies in darkness and I'm leaving the field of journalism, then am I just turning off one more light in the room? You know, fast forward to the end of the story, leaving journalism did not stop my writing career. Of course, I would just publish this book, which is the thing that I'm most proud of. But there is still this question of how did productivity, my self-worth, and my job become so tightly bound?
Well, let's explore that question. How did we get to a point, and I say we get to a point, where our identities are determined by what we do?
Yeah, you know, in many ways, this is a particularly American phenomenon. You know, we live in a country where the majority of people get their health care through their employment. If you're an immigrant, your ability to stay in this country is often determined based on your employment. You know, there are political reasons, there are economic reasons, there are cultural reasons why we got here. One of the big ones that I'll harp on in the book is there has been a precipitous decline in the past three or four decades in the number of institutions and community groups that once provided great sources of meaning and identity in our lives, things like organized religion or social or neighborhood groups. And with the decline of these institutions, the need for identity, for purpose, for belonging remained. And so the majority of Americans turned to where they spent the majority of their time, which is the workplace. Now, we live in a country that loves to treat celebrities like treat CEOs like celebrities. We plaster always do what you love on the walls of our co-working spaces. It's a country where productivity and self-worth are almost one in the same. And so the question is, what is the cost? If you're rising and falling based on your professional accomplishments alone, what gets left out? And I think the pandemic was a great emblem of what are some of these costs. For one, that your job might not always be there. If you are deriving identity solely based on your title as an employer at a certain company or your job title, and you lose your job due to a furlough or getting laid off or to retirement, you might be left wondering what's left. The second is just a matter of expectations. If we're always expecting our jobs to be a dream, if we're always expecting our jobs to be perfect, it creates a lot of room for disappointment. You know, a lot of the rhetoric that we use around do what you love and never work a day in your life or follow your passion obscures the fact that every line of work has monotony, has tedium in it. And if we have these sky high expectations, we can leave a lot to be desired. And the third, which I think really points to some of these studies that are coming out recently about the 4-day work week, is that when we are only investing and giving our best time and our best energy into our work selves, we can neglect other parts of who we are. Certainly, we're all more than just workers. We are neighbors and partners and parents and siblings and friends and citizens. And yet, so many Americans are giving so much of their time and energy to their jobs that they're leaving little room for anything else.
How much more do Americans work compared to other countries and cultures?
It's interesting. It's changed a lot in the last 4 decades. So if you look back to the 1970s, for example, the average American and the average French and the average German worker all worked the exact same number of hours each year on average. And now the average American works about 35% more than the average German worker. You know, there are many different explanations for why, but I think one of the most interesting facts is that some of the greatest increases in work time can be found among the highest earners, which is ahistorical. You know, if you are more wealthy as an individual or you are more wealthy as a country, historically you've worked less because, frankly, you can afford not to. Yet in the United States, a lot of the highest earners are the people who are trading their leisure time for more work. And, you know, there are many explanations for why. For one, we live in a country where you're able to consolidate wealth. So the more hours that you work can lead to more things that you are able to save for yourself and for your family. There's also the idea of work has become a lot better for a lot of people. And there's a subjective value that people give to work where they derive a primary source of identity and meaning. But the argument that I make in the book is when we are just investing in our work lives, it leads to weaker relationships, it leads to weaker communities and a weaker society at large.
I want to get back to the point you just made about the wealthiest, the CEOs, the executives working longer hours. Wouldn't there be or aren't there a segment of workers out there who would see that and almost look at it as part of the American dream? Oh, if I only work more hours, I work harder, I'm going to make more money, I can rise to that level.
Of course, yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I think often the reward for professional success in this country is more work. It's this great irony that a lot of us have known as you move up in your careers. I think there's two sides of it. One is our culture of work centricity, what I call workism in the book, is in many ways a precursor to a lot of the innovation, a lot of productivity that our country has had in the last 50, 60, 70 years. While at the same time, I think this culture where you are, you know, seeing on social media, people are parading their professional accomplishments around for everyone to see. You see this in the magazine articles that get published with CEOs on the cover. We live in a culture that thinks that success in life is synonymous with success in the workplace. You know, when we say someone is successful, we rarely mean that they are happy or that they are healthy. We mean that they've made a lot of money. And I think this mismatch between the factors that actually lead to a fulfilling life and what we seem to value here in this country can lead to a lot of disappointment, overwork, burnout, and all these factors that we're seeing across the board.
What about productivity? You mentioned that the average American worker works 35% more hours than the average German worker. Is the United States 35% more productive than Germany?
That's not the case. You know, I think productivity is a really interesting thing to be discussing right now, because we're sort of in this transition as an economy from being in a service and manufacturing-based economy to more of a knowledge-based economy. And a lot of research and studies have come out recently that show that the number of hours that you put in are not directly correlated to the amount of productivity that you get. You know, I think a lot of our standards for work are holdovers from a more industrial age where, say, if you're working on the assembly line, the number of hours you put in can be directly translated to the number of widgets you get out. But in a more knowledge economy, when your deliverable at work might be something like a strategy document for an organization or the headline from a marketing campaign, the number of hours you put in is not directly related to the quality of the work that you get out. And we're seeing this across the board. There have been a number of high-profile four-day work week studies in countries like Iceland or across the United Kingdom in the past 3 years that have shown that these organizations that have reduced the number of hours people work have led to no decrease in productivity. And in some cases, that's actually led to an increase in productivity. You know, we all know this on a personal level. If you're on hour 11 of a 12-hour day, or if you've worked 8 weeks in a row without taking a break, you're not going to be firing at all cylinders. You're not going to be producing your best work. And so I think the upshot of a lot of these studies is that by reducing the amount of hours people work, you can actually get more. There's a business case to be made.
Before we talk about the four-day work week in particular, I want to talk about the Great Recession in 2008, that many employers, not all, but many got workers to do more with less, meaning fewer employees, resources, because the economy was so bad, it almost became, well, no, almost, it did become standard operating procedure for many employers. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that right now. In the heart of the pandemic, there was a great swell in worker organization and labor and employee empowerment, where employees started to push back and say, we want higher pay, we want more workplace protections, we want better workplace standards. And now, as the labor market is tightening, we saw a round of layoffs, particularly in sectors like high tech that used to be these emblems of being great places to work and treating workers like family. Now we're seeing a beginning of a pushback where a lot of workers have gotten more quiet about these workplace demands because the general attitude is you should be grateful just to have a job. There's a line of people out the door who will happily take your place. You know, I think one of the big differences is, say, 60 years ago in the 1960s, the average CEO in this country made about 20 times the salary of the average employee that worked for them. And today, the average CEO, or as of last year, made 344 times the salary of the average employee. And so there have been great increases in productivity. You know, we're talking about the four-day work week. When the Fair Labor Standards Act was passed in 1940, there's been a 400% increase in productivity in this country. The problem is that those increases in productivity due to technology or better workplace practices have largely been passed on to executives and investors rather than the workers who are actually doing the work. And so I think that's the mismatch that we're seeing. Maybe in 2008, there was a tightening of the purse strings and there was a standard that was set where more workers were working overtime, more people were keeping their heads down and being okay with salary increases not keeping up with inflation. And there's still this sort of scarcity and fear-based mindset where people are told that they should be grateful just to have a job that prevents them and has a chilling effect of their ability to advocate for their rights.
You touched on this earlier, but getting back to the four-day work week, it seems, and I think that we've heard from some people who say it's counterintuitive, that workers can be as productive, can be happy with, or the business can be happy, the employer can be happy with workers working a four-day work week. Why is it that workers can be as productive? What has the research shown?
Yeah, it's essentially about our capacity to produce at a high level. You know, everyone knows this intuitively. Not all hours in the day are created equally. And when workers are well rested, when workers have been able to fully recharge and invest in their lives outside of work, they tend to be better workers. They tend to be more innovative and creative problem solvers. They tend to be more productive on the whole. You know, this might sound counterintuitive. I think a lot of us have internalized this idea that the more hours you work, the more work that you produce and the better you do. But for example, there was one study at Stanford University studying munition workers, and it found that above working a certain amount of hours, 55 hours in a week, there was no increase in productivity with additional hours worked. And so we might trick ourselves into thinking the more time we're spending working, the more work we're getting done, when in actuality, we're robbing ourselves of the rest that we need to recharge and become productive workers. That's sort of the business case. And then there's also the moral case, which is because we are all more than just workers, we need time and energy to invest in things like our families, our relationships, our neighborhoods, our local communities. And I think this reduction in the work week provides this great opportunity for people to invest and derive meaning from things other than just what they do to make money.
That 8 hours, those 8 hours that we were talking about, it would make that much difference.
I think so. You know, it's not just a matter of things like exercise and rest and investing in our social lives. You know, there was this great study in Iceland a few years ago where 1% of the entire Icelandic population reduced the work week to a 4-day work week. And the quote that really stuck out to me was they were interviewing this worker, and he said that this reduction in hours shows an increased respect for the individual, that we are not just machines that just work all day, then sleep and get back to work, but that we are people with desires and private lives and families and hobbies. You know, on the whole, 8 hours might not seem like a lot, but that can be the difference between having the time to go to the grocery store and making a fresh home-cooked meal versus having to take out food or being able to spend an actual hour or two spending quality time with your children as opposed to just, you know, feeding them and putting them to sleep. I think the ripple effects of these added hours in the day would do great things for our communities. And you look globally, the countries that tend to be happiest on the whole are also the countries that tend to have the best work-life balance.
What about technology? We have to admit that there are some workers in some industries that are concerned about the future of their jobs, their careers, because they could be replaced by AI. But you write in the book that that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two separate issues that we're discussing here. One is what is to be done with some of the increases in productivity that has been driven by technologies like artificial intelligence. Thus far, because of implementation of automation and different tools in the workplace, it has directly led to more productivity for organizations. As I mentioned before, a lot of this productivity is passed on to executives and investors as opposed to the workers themselves. Then there's a separate question of relevance and how we are able to compete in a machine age, in an age of AI. And I would say that in order to differentiate ourselves from the machines, in order to be able to produce things that only humans can do, we need the time and energy and the space in order to think. That's what differentiates humans from machines. If we want to have creative output, if we want to come up with real novel ideas, we can't just be in situations where we work to the bone every day or we're in meeting after meeting after meeting. Our brains need space for ideas to bounce off of each other. They need space to recharge and to formulate new thoughts. And I think having more time in the day is particularly a formula for being able to differentiate ourselves in an age of AI.
I mentioned in the introduction that that KPMG survey of CEOs said that 30% were willing to consider it or are considering it. That's almost a third, but it still is a big step for generations that have been, you know, grown up on, been weaned on a 40-hour work week. What does it take for an employer to say, maybe this is best for us?
I think it's important to consider that our current standards around work were not passed down from up on high. They were negotiated before, and they can be negotiated again. In 1938, when the Fair Labor Standards Act was passed, it was a pushback against the 70, 80-hour work weeks that we saw in the early 20th century with child labor and no workplace protections. The standard of a 4-day or a 5-day work week, a 40-hour work week, is relatively arbitrary. It was a choice that was made. It was fought for by organized labor in the past, and now we're seeing the natural evolution of that. To the employer, I would say that if you want to attract the best employees and you want to retain the best employees, you have to create an environment where they can be sustainably productive over the long run. You can look at, for example, that UK study that I mentioned. There were, I think, 61 companies who trialed a 4-day work week, and over 90% of them are sticking with it. The reasons being that it leads to better work. It leads to employees who are able to show up as the best versions of themselves. It leads to increased bottom line via higher productivity or less attrition, less need to hire, fewer people churning away from the company. And so there very much is the business case. And I think in the same way that companies compete with each other today to be perceived as the most mission-driven, and in the future, they will compete with each other to be perceived as the most work-life balanced or places that create the best culture to work.
The book is The Good Enough Job, Reclaiming Life from Work by Simone Stalsett. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Scott.